Hi everyone, I'm very glad to welcome today on the Making Society podcast Andrew Avrin, who is the person who launched BitLab at Little Bits, and he's going to tell us everything about it. And it's part of a BitLab special week on Making Society, so very happy to have you, Andrew, on the show. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Hey, Mathilde. Thank you so much for having me.
So maybe before we talk about the BitLab and how makers can develop their products on it, can you tell us a little bit more about Little Bits and, what is Little Bits?
Sure. So for those of you who may not be familiar, Little Bits is a library of modular electronics that all snap together with magnets. And in practice, what that really means is that we've built sort of an electronic Lego set, if you will. That's sort of the easiest way for people to wrap their brains around it if they've never seen it. And each of these individual modules have a singular purpose and function. No coding, no wiring, no soldering is required for you to actually take any of these individual components, snap them together, and build a physical device. So, for example, if you take a power module and then you snap together that with a button module, and then snap that together with an LED module, you very, very quickly, in a matter of seconds, have suddenly built a flashlight. It's basically a button-powered flashlight. And that really drives everything that we do. This very simple concept of modularity drives everything that people are building. And so if you take this simple concept of just ordering little modules, if you will, you can start to imagine how when you introduce more complex things like motors and motion sensors and light sensors and buzzers and sound generating devices, that you can actually really build some very complex things without a ton of technical knowledge as to how everything works.
So do you want to tell us exactly what the BitLab is and how does it work with Little Bits?
Absolutely. The BitLab is a brand new platform that actually opens up our roadmap, if you will, to the greater community. And what I mean by that is that we've built a platform where individuals can submit their own ideas for Little Bits modules and then allow the rest of the greater community to actually upvote the ones that are most desired. In turn, we will then manufacture and sell those modules, and the original developer gets 10% of the gross revenue. So this is sort of a win-win across the board because it allows us to involve the community in the true open and democratic nature in which we've built the product and the company. And it allows the developer ultimately to potentially make some significant money off of their original designs. And so we've already been working very closely with both established companies as well as individual designers and everywhere in between, where individuals have unique ideas or unique applications, and people are submitting prototypes left and right of these unbelievably awesome ideas for modules. And what we require is a working prototype. Mm-hmm. And a working prototype can mean a number of different things to a number of different people. And the best place that I can actually show that is for those who are interested to check out our website at littlebits.cc/bitlab, and you'll see some of the modules that are currently up for vote and in review. And what you'll see is that a working prototype can mean many different things. Some people have gone so far as to actually create a finished circuit board. So they've designed a printed circuit board, mm-hmm. had it manufactured, soldered all the components on, and to the naked eye, it might look like a finished product. Other people have taken breadboards, wired a whole bunch of stuff together, plugged it into Little Bits using the hardware development kit, and voila, they have something that works. And so we've seen everything, on both ends and in between on that spectrum.
When did you start working on the BitLab project? Is it a really recent thing? I discovered it recently, actually.
Yeah, the BitLab itself when I first joined, I learned was actually a concept that both our founder and our head of research and development had been thinking about for actually a number of years. The way in which they spoke about it was that it was a no-brainer to build out a platform that allowed the community to present their own ideas to Little Bits, to the rest of the community, et cetera, et cetera. And when I joined, I first worked on the CloudBit. But before the CloudBit had even launched, we had set up the timeline for when the BitLab was going to launch, and that was right around Maker Faire. As a matter of fact, 3 months to the day from when we're recording this podcast. It was actually September the 16th that we launched. Mm-hmm. And we set up a plan and got the ball rolling around August to design what the web interface was going to look like, and everything took off from there. So in the span of about 6 weeks, now a lot of the foundation, at least from a conceptual perspective, had been laid in years past, but we basically got everything built and up and running in a matter of 6 weeks for a September 16th launch, which coincided with Maker Faire here in New York City this year.
Who can participate? You mentioned companies or individuals. A company can come up with a design and put it on BitLab without any problem. Like there is, did you see already companies sending projects to you?
We built the system so that it favored both individuals as well as established companies. We wanted to make sure that partnerships, the potential partnerships that we establish through the BitLab, were encouraged. So the way in which we've designed our program is modules that companies submit, they still own. So we're not in the business of actually, you know, owning anybody's proprietary technology. So, you know, if you look at some of the modules that we initially launched with, we actually launched with three established companies that are up for vote. So we started with Backyard Brains and their Muscle Spiker Bit. We started with Dr. Bleep's Bleep Drum. And then we also started with Gabotronics built an oscilloscope. And all three of those are established companies. And so we wanted to make sure that established companies felt encouraged to submit without the threat, if you will, of somebody owning their technology. There are other community-sourced platforms that exist out there where, as you make your way further on down the process, they actually outright own your design. And especially for established companies, we didn't want individuals, you know, CEOs or CTOs or even just designers for some of these companies who already have existing products to be discouraged, if you will, from submitting something.
Mm-hmm. So the individuals that you think were already proposing modules, who are they? What's the typical person who can actually make the modules and propose a functional prototype?
We've actually kind of seen everybody. I mean, most of the people follow a common thread in that they have some experience building electronics or tinkering or designing circuitry. But, you know, some of the things that we've seen are not actually that complex, which means that with a little bit of time and a little bit of tinkering, you can actually build something that's functional. We've seen a number of established companies. Mm-hmm. We've seen a number of individuals. So one of the individuals who's actually currently under review is a 19-year-old student from the Netherlands named Philip Verbeek. He happens to be a whiz at building circuits as well as Lego designs. And in his own time, he built an amazing module. He built an RGB LED strip that just sort of wowed everybody. And so he's just a kid. We are all incredibly impressed by him. But, you know, with, you know, I think about $10 or $15 worth of initial cost, you know, he built something that, you know, 1,000 people upvoted. And that was, you know, an amazing, amazing thing, not only for him, but for us to watch the community's response as well.
The top criteria to be able to submit a model is to have a working prototype. No matter the shape, it doesn't have to be ready to be produced.
Correct. A working prototype is what we require. And we were very deliberate in how we set up that set of criteria because we didn't want to make any decisions before we saw how the community responded. In other words, if somebody came up with an idea for a module that, you know, realistically might be really big or might be really expensive, we didn't want to make the decision for the community. We wanted to leave it up to the community itself to tell us how much they actually desired a particular module. After those votes are acquired, Then we go into a review phase where we actually look at, okay, let's look and see what this design actually is. Let's see if we can acquire all the necessary components. Let's see if we can manufacture this for a reasonable price. And then we'll determine whether or not we should move forward. We have a whole number of criteria that are listed up on our support site that outline some of the things that we take into account when we go through the quote-unquote review phase. But we wanted to make sure that we put as much of the power in the community itself. It's, you know, we are an open sourced company, and, you know, for pretty much anybody listening, I think they'll know what that means. But in case you don't, it means that the design of our modules are all made publicly available. So you can log on to our website, and you can navigate over to GitHub, and you can actually see the individual circuit schematics for our, you know, our servo motor, or for our DC motor, or for our LED. The only thing that we maintain intellectual property over are the bitsnap connectors that actually make the whole system work as one. And we wanted to further that idea with the BitLab itself.
Is it hard to get the 1,000 votes? Because that's the only criteria, right, to get to the next stage. So that's really important, those 1,000 votes. Is it mostly friends and families, or you really have to have a big family? Who are the voters? How do you find them?
We've seen a little bit of everything with regard to vote acquisition. For some of the people, they actually have established communities all on their own. So you take somebody like Philip, or there's another individual who's just about at 1,000 votes as we record this. And I suspect that by the time listeners hear this, he'll have gotten 1,000 votes. His name is Kuz, and he is a hardware developer out of San Francisco. And he built a three-axis accelerometer and gyroscope module. And so both of these guys have been promoting their module all on their own through social media. In this case, they each have their own websites, so they've been promoting there. We as well have been making sure to promote these two, as well as all the other modules that are up for vote. But, you know, for some of the other individuals, you know, there's a wonderful submitter that actually has submitted, I think, three or four modules now, and a few more under are in the queue for us to put live. His name is Jopet, and he's based out of Singapore, and he just cranks out these ideas left and right. And for him, you know, he has spread his prototypes through word of mouth, again through social media, through some of his own channels, again through friends and family. You know, one of the things that we're excited to see actually with our conversation here today is to, you know, explore ways in which future submitters might be able to interact with the Making Society community and get the word out that way as well. You know, what we've seen is that getting 1,000 votes is, you know, absolutely possible. Mm-hmm. You know, having said that, it's, as we are now 3 months in, we understand that not every single module is going to be super desirable. And so it's really okay that not everything makes it up to 1,000 votes. You know, we want to, you know, finding that perfect balance between a threshold that's achievable but not too difficult to achieve, you know, is really crucial. And so, especially as our community grows and as the BitLab itself integrates itself with the rest of our existing website, you know, we're excited to continue to tell the stories as to why people should really care about these amazing ideas that people are submitting.
Mm-hmm. Is there already a module coming from the BitLab that's on sale on LittleBits, or it's in production so far?
I am so glad you asked, because the Backyard Brains Muscle Spiker, Dr. Bleep's Bleep Drum, and Gabotronic's Oscilloscope are all successfully out of the review phase and are now going into production.
Cool.
We are hugely excited for this, because it is a massive milestone for the BitLab, because it means 3 months to the day that the votes were acquired, the platform was launched, we went through the review phase, and actually have begun setting up the processes for officially and completely manufacturing these modules en masse for eventual sale early next year.
Cool.
I could not be more excited, and it's been a thrill to work as closely as we have with these three companies as we've gone through the review phase.
Mm-hmm. So you, even after the votes is finished, this review phase, and what kind of collaboration do you have with them afterwards?
The review phase itself is a really important part of the process because what it allows us to do is really get to understand the original design and understand what the developer's goals are. What we want to do is strike that balance between bringing ideas in, but making sure that they fit within the Little Bits ecosystem. So if you look at most of the modules that we've released, they all have very specific individual purposes, with the exception of the CloudBit and the Arduino module, simply because those can be programmed. Pretty much everything else has one purpose and one function. And so during this review phase, one of the things that we'll look at is, okay, how many different modes of operation are there? Are, you know, is this particular module trying to do, you know, 10 things? Is it trying to do one thing? You know, we like to keep things as modular as possible. And what that ultimately results in is having modules that really do have sort of a narrow function and narrow purpose. And ultimately, it means that there is room for growth, there is room for future iterations, and there's room for expansion. You know, the review phase will also allow us time to, you know, refine what the actual module looks like. So, you know, for those of you who actually own or have seen Little Bits, there's a ton of product design that actually goes into this prototyping tool, ironic as it may seem. We have a ton of designers who work specifically on refining what the product is supposed to look like and feel like and be perceived as, fine-tuning colors and layouts. And, you know, all of these things really, truly matter. And so we'll also take that into account and work with the designer to make sure that we have a design that, you know, works holistically across the entire Little Bits ecosystem. You know, one of the other things that we'll take into account is, you know, is this something that we can actually mass manufacture? You know, we all use the example internally that, you know, it may be the case that the design is dependent upon a particular component or microcontroller that, you know, isn't manufactured anymore. Or, you know, is only found in very small quantities and makes them impossible to actually acquire. And so for instances like that, you know, we'll try to see if there are different ways in which we can, you know, have the developer rework the design or, you know, implement the design in a way that doesn't necessarily allow us to be so dependent upon a particular component or microcontroller. Mm-hmm. So all those things go into this review phase. And, you know, we have tons of collaboration, sending different schematics back and forth. We all use GitHub as a way to keep track of our different versions of files, different schematics, different board layouts, different bills of material, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's a very collaborative process. But at the same time, you know, we absolutely want to make sure that the developer, you know, helps drive their vision. Mm-hmm.
So what if the prototype, the work of the proof of concept that was shown voted up on the BitLab ended up being need to be different to be able to be manufactured? Like if there is a lot of change in the design itself of the product, maybe using different components, is the maker still owning the his idea, or how far can it be changed without affecting the whole purpose of the BitLab?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we are excited to see is, you know, how the developers themselves might come up with different ways of implementing a particular design. You know, we've seen a number of modules that are sort of Arduino-based, where people will take an Arduino shield and program it in a certain way, and then, you know, attach a few other sensors or actuators. And it's a fantastic way to prototype. But, you know, I suspect that by the time we get to mass manufacturing these and designing them for manufacturing, or DFM, as we call internally, we want to actually do it in a way that's going to benefit the developer the most. And what I mean by that is the cheaper that we can manufacture it, the better it's going to be for the community at large, because it means that the barrier to actually acquiring it is going to be lower and lower. We don't believe that, you know, changing things or, you know, altering the design or having the developer come up with a different way of implementing a particular aspect of their circuit, you know, defeats the purpose of the BitLab, because, you know, it's actually, you know, allowing some of these individuals to function like some of our own engineers, which is one of the things that we love to see. I mean, I talked about this internally for, you know, for a very long time before we actually launched the BitLab, and It's this concept of elevating the everyman. Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of companies like Korg and Arduino who, you know, have very established user bases and fan bases and people who know and use their products. But for the, you know, for the smaller companies, for the everyday individuals, we want to figure out ways to elevate them so that they're empowered just like some of these established companies. And so, you know, that's part of this review phase as well, for them to sort of, you know, go straight to the heart of our you know, sort of development design process and you know, get them involved. I mean, that's you know, it is one of the things that, you know, we're excited to have the BitLab allow us to do, and that's to sort of spread the wealth. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we've set up this program to benefit the developers for is, you know, to actually have them take their design, implement it all the way through to a manufacturing state, and then it actually gets sold and manufactured. And, you know, for that, they get to see, you know, an actual revenue stream that hopefully impacts them in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm. So talking about the revenue stream, can you maybe tell me a little more about how this revenue sharing works and once a project is accepted? For example, for those three successful modules that are going to go in production, what happened to them next?
Absolutely. So I'll walk you through the process that happens now, and then we'll sort of get to, you know, what will happen about 3 or 4 months from now. Mm-hmm. So right now, that our initial three modules that we launched with are officially in production, what that means is that we'll be working with them to fine-tune the exact design of the modules themselves, fine-tuning the exact layout of the components, and then setting up timelines on the back end on our production side as to when we can actually officially launch these. For those of you who may not have ever mass manufactured circuitry, there are a ton of things that go into the actual manufacturing process. The first and foremost is that you need to get a circuit board made. Now, depending upon the complexity of the circuit, that circuit board can have anywhere from 2, sometimes to 6 individual layers. And there are companies that exist just specifically for manufacturing these circuit boards. Now, in some cases, that same company might be involved in actually assembling the circuits. And what I mean by that is taking all the components, applying them to the actual circuit board, and soldering them into place. But in most cases, they're not the same company. So then what we need to do is take our circuit boards and actually bring them to the facility where the end product will actually get created. But that's just the circuit board component. Then we have all these other electrical components, anywhere from resistors to capacitors to sensors to microcontrollers. And we have a sourcing lead on our team who is an absolute whiz when it comes to this. Her sole function is to figure out how to acquire components across the globe. Now, in many instances, we're, I don't want to say competing, but that's sort of the best way to put it. We're up against these huge electronics manufacturing companies who are buying millions and millions of components at a time. And so what that means is that there are significant lead times from when we say we want something to when we actually get it. And so there's this little bit of a time dance where we want to manufacture the circuit boards and acquire the components so that everything shows up at the facility at the right time so that we can reduce the actual production of the final product as to as small amount of a time as possible. Mm-hmm. Then once it's done, it then moves on to a facility where the actual product itself gets packaged and kitted into its final form. And then depending upon where that happens, we might then send it over to yet another facility where it actually gets sent out to customers. So there are a lot of steps involved in all of that. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of behind the scenes work that's, you know, somewhat hidden from the end user. Mm-hmm. But once we get far enough along that process where we have a finalized bill of materials, we know exactly what the module is going to cost, we're able to then figure out, you know, how much is this sold for? We can start to get some, you know, design validation tested modules and get, you know, an example of what that finished form is going to look like. That'll allow us to photograph it, document it, put it up on our site for everybody to see. In some cases, we'll open that up for pre-sale where individuals can, you know, pre-order the product before it's actually available. And then once we get to that point, we're pretty much, you know, our path is locked. We know exactly what's going to happen. We've chosen a release date and, you know, we'll be launching with those modules. I would anticipate to be available sometime around Q2 of 2015.
like springtime, something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So there is no really no ways to guess in advance how much a module is going to be, and for the maker to have some kind of ideas on how much he can actually make from proposing a module, or is there what's the rule about the revenue sharing?
So we have a 10% gross revenue share set up. And what that means is if we sell a module for $30, for example, the developer will end up getting $3 of every single individual sale. There are a few things that get discounted from that. For example, occasionally there are some credit card fees. Occasionally there are returns of actual modules. And, you know, some of that would be, you know, discounted and averaged out over the course of the quarter. But roughly speaking, developers should expect to see 10% of the price that the module is sold for. And the way in which we've set up the process is we calculate how many of their individual modules are sold on a per quarter basis. And then at the end of every quarter, we have official accounting that gets sent over to the developer along with a check with their appropriate amount.
So maybe to give some ideas of bits that are very popular among the Little Bits community, what are the most popular ones?
Sure. We've seen a ton of amazing adoption of things like the Cloud Bit, of the Arduino module, of, you know, some of the synth modules. You know, some of these are really powerful modules that as we have existed from day one, we've always said that no soldering or wiring or programming is needed. However, for those individuals who do have some experience in that, they actually bring a whole amazing set of skills that very much so enhance their experience. And so, you know, some of the most popular modules are the ones where, you know, if you bring your own skill set to the table, the sky is the limit in terms of what you can do.
What types of projects do you think has the most chance to be successful and to be actually produced? Do you have recommendations or at least ideas on the type of modules that are popular?
From what I've seen in the last 3 months, the modules that end up making the biggest impact are actually the ones that are able to tell a great story. And what I mean by that is, you know, the basic requirement for submitting a module is indeed to have a working prototype, but what we also ask you to do is provide photographs and video of your module in action. You know, one of the things that's incredibly powerful is showing the why. And what I mean by the why is why somebody should actually really care about your individual design. So if you can see something in action and you can see how you're going to care about this as a potential buyer of that individual module, that far and away drives home the biggest and best story. Because the why is what connects somebody from just a series of electrical components to allowing them to see how this could actually impact their lives. So creating videos and taking photographs that actually depict a story are hugely important. You know, we're more than happy to provide feedback on how some of your photos and videos might, you know, first appear after their first cut. You know, I, along with our BitLab team, we have a review team that sits internally. We go through every single individual submission, and, you know, I'm in contact with every single person on a very personal basis who submits something to the BitLab. That making sure that they convey that why is, you know, by far and away the most important thing from my perspective. I think probably the best video that we saw was so far has probably been the Backyard Brains video. And for those of you who might not know, Backyard Brains is a group of neuroscientists originally out of the University of Michigan. And they've since started a company that actually is... they have a similar mission that Little Bits does, and that's to bring neuroscience experiments to the every person. And so their designs and their products lower the barrier to entry to neuroscience. And so the video that they created actually showed how, with their muscle spiker module in the Little Bits realm, allowed them to perform a number of experiments, specifically as relates to... your muscle anatomy, to a pedometer, to understanding your movement, to seeing how your muscles can actually control the world is a, it was a beautiful display of their technology in a way that any person could imagine themselves as being the person in that video. And so that's really one of the best that I've seen. And it just tells a story, and you'll see them walk through a number of different examples. And, you know, I imagine they came about this from some of their own marketing and some of their own press creation that they've done for their specific product. But that's really the one that stands out first and foremost. And that's not to say that we haven't seen some other amazing ones, because in other instances, a beautiful module will almost sort of sell itself. And so, you know, making sure to capture that beauty, that visibility is also hugely important. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you would say the video should show the module itself and how it works and the technical aspects of it and examples on how to what could be done with it.
Absolutely.
And, it's almost the same process, would you say, that making a crowdfunding video, like people making videos for their Kickstarter campaign, for example? Is it this kind of videos that should be done, or something more simple and DIY?
It's a great question. I think, personally speaking, that's definitely what we would love to see more of, because telling that compelling story is important. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we're making things that can be applied in many different ways, but by guiding a potential user through the world that they are basically creating with their module will help somebody have a place to start. So I think some of those crowdfunding videos are fantastic places for inspiration for, you know, what I'd love to see as future BitLab videos.
Mm-hmm. And what else has to appear on the proposal?
Sure. So the proposal itself, as I've mentioned a couple times, you'll want to have a working prototype. And, you know, I should have mentioned this earlier, but for those who don't know, we, alongside the BitLab, launched our hardware development kit. And the hardware development kit is what actually allows you to take any of your circuits that you may be building outside of LittleBits and to plug them into our system. So we run an analog system that runs from 0 to 5 volts. It's very easy to use. It's very simple to work with. And so using our proto module, for example, you can just take a wire and connect, you know, your external circuit directly into the LittleBits system. So once you have your working prototype, as I just mentioned, you'll want to capture photos and videos. And you'll want to describe what it is that your module does in just a basic text description. You know, sometimes there are different modes. There are different ways to work with it. You know, maybe giving a little bit of background on some of the main components. But giving somebody a comprehensive overview, you know, think about it as sort of the first paragraph in any Wikipedia entry consists of a very comprehensive overview touching on the high bullet points of, you know, what a particular thing is. Mm-hmm. And once you submit, you know, those four pieces, your prototype, your videos, your photos, and your description, that goes into a queue on the back end in our admin control panel. And then we have a weekly standing meeting every Tuesday where we review with the BitLab committee every single one of the modules that gets submitted. And, you know, as I mentioned before, we really don't do much editorializing at this point. We don't want to make any decisions about, you know, how the module is built or what it could or could not do. We just want to make sure that the submission is complete and it's family friendly. As long as it has those two things, it's going to go up for vote.
I have a question, because I know that like many people are part of hacker spaces or fab labs and just work as teams. So do you organize or are part of events where people are working in teams to create BitLabs? Is this something you're thinking of, or it's mostly so far people working separately?
So far we've seen it's really sort of individuals or established companies. But having said that, I mean, we've done a number of sort of hackerspace events here around New York City. And, you know, we've seen all different kinds of people working on potential ideas. You know, from my own personal experience, what I've seen is that in many cases, people who are working together have, you know, some form of at least loosely established company, But, you know, I'd be excited to see what a kind of collaboration might look like, because, you know, in some cases, you know, if there are two people who come from two different walks of life and two different sets of unique experiences, you know, they might come together to create a module that is, you know, far and away something that's much greater than the sum of the individual parts. So I strongly encourage, you know, people who are looking, you know, if you're looking for a partner, you know, a great place to start is our forum, where you can access the BitLab section and reach out to anybody who, you know, is already plugged into the BitLab. You know, if you're interested in you know, getting paired up, you know, you can always reach out to us specifically, and we can see if there are other individuals looking, or you can look out for any one of our number of events where, you know, you're bound to run across people who come from different walks of life looking to build something for the BitLab. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about internally as well as externally is, you know, this process of democratizing hardware invention. You know, when we launched the CloudBit, it really allowed anybody to create any kind of Internet of Things device that they wanted. And that sense of democratization, meaning that, you know, we're not going to dictate what it is that you should buy or should build. We're just going to give you the tools to build them. We wanted to carry that same mindset forward. So, you know, true democratization means that anybody has a say. And that's really what this platform is built around. Anybody has a say in submitting an idea, and anybody has a say in voicing their opinion for any of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I really like the fact that it's a very concrete example of what open hardware can do. And, you know, we're always saying, oh, with open source hardware, you can have anyone copy your design and participate, but usually it's very flimsy. Like, there is no real setup behind it, like no real platform to be able to participate. It's not always very easy to actually get involved in open hardware, and many people just use modules or components, but they don't actually give back. So I really like to see this type of platform like the BitLab that really is, you know, helping people participate in a way. So It's really exciting.
See you on makingsociety.com with all the links and information we talked about in this episode during this special BitLab week on Making Society. I will also share in the coming days some more detailed information on how to succeed on the BitLab, with lots of advice and very concrete information about the different steps you can take and how to find your module idea and how to get your votes. So don't hesitate to go check Making Society along this week and later if you listen to the episode after January. Bye, enjoy.